The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Frisch, Judge Gaetes, Judge Klapacki, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is February 2nd, 2022. We have five cases on our calendar this morning, and we are here on our first case, A21-1012, Tangden versus City of Edina. Counsel, I know we've tested your audio and video. We can hear and see you very well. Our marshal will be showing a running clock of your time. You'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. A few housekeeping matters. Because these matters are being recorded, I ask that you identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking. And with that, I think that covers all of our housekeeping matters. So, counsel, you may begin whenever you're ready.
Great. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Paul Reavers, and I represent the appellant, City of Edina. This case involves the application of statutory discretionary function immunity. I'm going to refer to that just as statutory immunity for simplicity. And that's a legal question for this court. It reviews de novo. And we're seeking a reversal of the district court's denial of immunity based on the city's decision not to pump the East Basin. And this decision was a policy decision that only water features that are endangering homes will be pumped by the city. And that decision is a policy decision that was made back in 2014. It was made again in 2017 when the issue was brought to the attention of the city by Mr. Tangden. And it was reaffirmed again by the city council in 2021. I do want to point the court to a few things in the record that I think are important. I think the important documents or facts I just want to highlight for the court as it reviews this are the Barr report, the Westwood report. So these are the city's consulting engineers, Barr Engineering. Westwood was the plaintiff's expert, the declaration of Mr. Milner. The staff report in February of 17th of 2021 just provides a good overview for the court, I believe.
And so, counsel, I know that you've characterized the challenge conduct or the governmental conduct as the failure to pump the East Basin. I appreciate that. I know that the parties have discussed that extensively. Mr. Tangden's argument is that is a distinct decision from the city's decision not to maintain, inspect, or repair the stormwater system, of which the East Basin is a part. And I'm wondering if that is a finer distinction that you can address for us, that particular decision not to maintain.
Well, I mean, I guess let me break that down for the court. Because the first part is the notion that there is the city does nothing, that there's no inspection of the basin. And what the record really shows is we don't proactively go out and do anything to wetlands or lakes. What we do is if we get a citizen complaint, we'll go look at it. And that's what Mr. Milner's testified to. And that's what we did when we got the complaint. We went and looked at it. And the record is clear. There's no issues with any sedimentation or problems with that. And so the notion...
Is the record clear about that? Because when I look at the plaintiff's expert report, it seems to suggest that there's a bunch of junk that has accumulated at the bottom of the, or that's interfering with the runoff.
I frankly don't see that, Your Honor, in the report. I read it again this morning, and he acknowledges in his report that at least the ironic part is we're in 10 years of the wettest period in the history of the state. And now in this past year, we had a drought. It just highlights the swing and the climate that we're going to continue to experience. But his report mentions that at least when he was revealing the matter, that the groundwater level acknowledged as in the Barr report is basically at ground level. So the groundwater has risen to the point, and that is the issue. And the issue that the plaintiffs, again, take the Westwood report at face value, it's build a pump station, build a lift station is the recommendation. And the city council has made the determination that we're not going to build a lift station And that's the resolution that we have. The city council, when this court and the Supreme Court has routinely said capital improvements fall squarely within the discretionary function line of cases for immunity.
We've had some years of a good amount of rain. Projections are we're probably going to see some more of that. Mm-hmm. As the basin keeps filling up, when we have these rainy seasons, is there's going to come a point where Edina is going to have to do something, or is it going to all just flood back?
Well, and that's where the city made the determination back in 2014, just to prioritize. And then what the city determined was, listen, we can't deal with all of these requests. And so
the city decided if it gets to some structures, then we'll take some action.
Right. And that's a reasonable approach, that if we've got to allocate resources, let's protect people's homes first. And put, you know, yards and tennis courts down the list, so to speak. And, you know, there's the argument by plaintiffs here that we're trying to abrogate some duty and we're not. And I think that the important case that I want to make sure I highlight for the court is the Chabot versus City of Sauk Rapids case, because I really do believe this provides the outline for the court. And there was a overflow of a basin holding pond in the city. And again, the argument was, hey, they knew there was a problem with that basin. They didn't do anything. And the court found that the determination of not spending money to address that problem was a discretionary function. The court went on to say, and this is why I think the case is important, is that, you know, we're talking about natural water features. This is not a case of, and this is where Chabot highlighted, where it's not a situation where the city's diverting water or creating the problem or causing the problem. That is undisputed in the record, because the last development was in 1998. This area consists of about, and I think this is the other piece I wanted to point to court, and I kind of just have to hold it up, because it's in the bar report. I know it's kind of hard to see, but it's page 12 of the bar report, and that's a document 16. And it shows there's about 50 homes. And for that East Basin. And when Barr looked at this, they said, even if we moved all of the homes, all of the water from that basin, you know, out of the district, it would have no impact or negligible impact on the East Basin.
What about putting in a functioning outlet? That's different than a decision not to pump the East Basin.
It's a low-lying area. The only way to do that would be able to pump it. And even plaintiff's expert says pumping it to the Highlands. The Highlands Lake is actually higher, is a higher elevation. So the East Basin is lower. So the only way to dewater is to pump it it into the Highlands Lake.
Now, if there is some remedy other than pumping the East Basin, and the inspection or maintenance or repair could have revealed some other remedy, would you still be entitled to discretionary function immunity?
Well, here, yes, because number one, we have a reactionary, when we get a complaint, we respond to it, and that's what happened here. So the notion that there is someone...
But I think the claim is that the response was negligent.
Right. Well, they keep saying inspection, but we did look at it. I guess the notion that plaintiff's experts said that his recommendation is build the lift station. And the bar looked at a couple of options. One was diverting all of the East Basin and they said that wouldn't do any good, number one. Number two is trying to build a flood wall. They indicated they likely won't get approval from the watershed district or the DNR. And the third was the pumping, which was not consistent with the city's policy. And keep in mind, this is a natural wetlands.
Does the city ever dredge or clean out these wetland basins?
They're certainly not this. What Mr. Milner testified to is there's two pipes that have been there from the development. Because I mean, there's no pumping of water to this. Water flows obviously downhill. It has forever here. And so Mr. Milner's testified, we looked at the outlets. There's no sedimentation there. There is no evidence of
nothing blocking the existing outlets.
Right. And there's no outlets. There's just the inlets from the streets that have been there for years. Again, the water flows down.
Is that undisputed though? I mean, I think that Mr. Tangden's expert disputes that there's not a blockage?
Well, I think the expert, his indication is the water's not infiltrating. So in other words, the groundwater is up. I see nothing in his report that says, because there's no outlet. It's not like there's an outlet pipe that's blocked. And this is a situation where the water level has risen. So, and the city has no obligation to, that's not something the city caused or did. This is a natural occurring situation. This is what Chabot talked about, was that, wait a minute, the city doesn't have an obligation to do anything. And therefore, we're not trying to abrogate some common law or statutory duty here. And again, this is when you have a naturally occurring situation. I just want to, underscore the policy implications here, because the notion that we have to lower the 10 lakes or the countless wetlands in the city as groundwater rises, that's a policy decision that the city's entitled to.
Well, at some point, might the groundwater rise to the point where it starts to go into the structures, basements, and infecting foundations?
And they couldn't. And on that basis, the city has made the determination that it will pump under those circumstances. But it's made the determination, again, starting back in 2014, we can't fix everything. And we have to allocate the limited resources of the city.
So what kind of cost was there associated with the proposed pumping?
For this one, the record shows that to construct a permanent lift station, we're talking as much as $100,000, I believe, is what the staff report said. And the city council made the determination that's not consistent with our policy. We're not going to make that capital improvement. And that type of determination is a consummate policy decision that our elected officials are.
And this basin is part of a watershed district, is it?
It is. I mean, it's kind of the overlay. Think the Nine Mile Creek Watershed District is, another responsible government unit for, water or
does the district ever pump and assess it back to benefited property owners or anything like that?
Nothing like that's in the record, Your Honor. I don't know that that's ever occurred. I do know in this situation that you need to get a DNR water appropriation permit to pump. So the DNR has some level of involvement too. And that was always an option for the respondent to do that. And that's where the city started helping him to acquire that permit and then realized we can't do it. That's inconsistent with our policy. So the landowner could pump if they got the permit and pumped to the street is an option. But the city didn't do that here because that's inconsistent with the policy from 2014.
So let me ask you a question about the city's acquisition of a DNR pumping permit and then the later decision not to act on that permit. Mm-hmm. Does that evince some question of fact as to whether the city is making a decision based on its professional judgment as opposed to a decision that's grounded in its that's a planning level decision? Because the fact that someone with authority went to the DNR and got a permit to engage in pumping and then there was a decision not to actually act on it, I question whether we have, or at least that creates some question of fact that would preclude the entry of summary judgment in this case.
In my response is, government, we're here to help people. And staff was trying to help Mr. Tengen, but then was advised, wait a minute, that's inconsistent with our policy. We can't do that. If we make an exception for Mr. Tengen, we're going to have to do that for everybody. And again, that's where Mr. Bintner, is in the record, didn't realize that the policy prohibited that. And that policy was made, there's a suggestion that staff doesn't have the authority to do that. Well, the city manager is the CEO, the chief manager, and these are the department heads. And you look at the immunity cases from snow plowing to this, it's routine. You don't have the county board weighing in on, snow plowing policies and things like that. So the fact that we have the department heads and the CEO of the city, the city manager, making that decision, that's what they're supposed to do. They have the authority to do that.
I suppose there still is a political possibility that the city council could direct the city manager or to modify the policy. Is that right?
They could, and that's why it was brought back. And it just, you know, this, you know, there's a suggestion, there's an after the fact kind of notion with the city council, but keep in mind, this was brought to the city by petition by Mr. Tengen and the neighbors. The city commissioned a study with Barr to see what are our options. And then then we got sued. And then we brought it back to the city council to close the loop on it. And they ultimately made the decision. They could have made the decision to say, yeah, let's spend $100,000 to build a lift station. Or, but they decided not to do that. And that's, they could change that. The city council are the elected officials, and they have the ability to set policy for the city. And they've confirmed and said, and the record is they've been advised of this policy from 2014 on. And again, they've indicated continue to follow the policy that you've adopted. I see my time is winding down here. I just want to emphasize that this truly is a policy decision made by the city council. We're not abrogating any common law duty. This is a natural water feature, and the city has no obligation to do more than it did. And I ask the court to reverse the district court based on statutory immunity. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. You'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We're going to reset the clock for you anytime you're ready, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Tamara O'Neill Moreland. I'm of the law firm Larkin Hoffman, and I'm representing the respondent, Robert Tengen. To be clear, we're here today to determine if the decision by the city's staff not to inspect, maintain, or repair the East Basin is afforded discretionary immunity under Minnesota law.
What kind of repair would be possible for this East Basin?
I'm not sure that we know of all the repairs. I don't think that there was a comprehensive report done by anyone. I mean, pumping is something that both experts said is a possibility, a remedy to what happened here, but it is a remedy. We're not here to talk about whether pumping is the act that gets discretionary immunity. We're here to talk about whether their failures for the last decades is what
affords
them.
Did anybody identify what kind of repair might be possible to this East Basin short of pumping?
Dredging might be possible. The one thing about sediment is that it was never
So is this East Basin, East Basin collects water from the surrounding area? The sediment come in with that drainage from those areas?
It does. And to say that it's just the natural flow of water is wrong. To actually measure the sediment and the gunk that's in there, they would have to be a very expensive test done. And neither one of the experts did that test. The only thing that the city did was come look at the outlet pipes to see if there is sediment around the outlet pipes. Nobody looked to see how much sediment's in the actual basin. One way to obviously have it hold more water is to dredge it.
And is your claim that the city was obligated to conduct this expensive testing?
Yes, what we're claiming is this is a long time ago. This is a long process in the making. This isn't just the natural flow of water. There are two communities that have piping that the city installed that drain directly into the basin: Interlochen Bluff and Skyline Drive. Interlochen Bluff has a 15-inch outlet that's coming into the basin, and Skyline Drive has a 24-inch outlet. This isn't like Cabot.
I think we understand the topography here, counsel. What we're really interested in, or at least speaking for myself, what I'm really interested in is, other than pumping, is there, and which is a decision by the city based in policy not to engage in pumping unless a habitable structure is threatened, is there some other repair or maintenance that you claim the city failed to do to rectify the flooding in the East Basin?
When the city failed to inspect it over all these years, what they failed to do is monitor how much water is going into the East Basin. This isn't like Chabot, where it was a ditch that just naturally, that went with the natural flow of water. They're draining water into the East Basin. So when that East Basin becomes unable to handle that much water, The city had a duty to stop it, to stop the water coming
in. By doing what? It can't stop rain.
They can stop what actually taking water from other portions of the city and putting it into this East Basin. The problem is that they're pumping too much water into it and its outlet isn't working anymore. Its outlet was groundwater and that's not working anymore. Now, the only remedy to that is to get the water out. And
how do we accomplish
stop pumping water in?
And how do we accomplish that other than pumping?
Well, pumping is the remedy to get the water out, obviously, because it's not going anywhere because there's no outlet. However, if you want water to stop coming in, there's always the natural flow of water, but you can stop directing water from Interlochen Bluff and Skyline Drive into it, because then not as much water. This is why inspection and repair is required.
Does the city have some contractual obligations with these other municipalities that you mentioned or in other areas?
They're communities. So I'm sure there's development agreements with them, but I'm not privy to what they say. But they can direct it someplace else. Water can be directed. Obviously, they're directing it into here. And I think it's wrong to assume that the city has a pumping policy. They do now after this lawsuit. But the actual testimony from Milner was that he set the pumping policy somewhere between 2014 and 2017. He couldn't actually say when. It was never approved.
Can I just ask, is your argument that the pumping policy is not a genuine policy and was devised for the purpose of this litigation?
Yes, it was an operational decision and it only became a policy after this lawsuit started. If you look at the briefing, the city claims that the pumping policy was communicated to the city council in the past, but they never say when that happened.
Say that it happened in 2014.
Well, they didn't say it was communicated to the city in 2014.
Why does it have to be communicated to the city?
To the city council for actual, yeah. Because it was not a policy decision. There's nothing in the affidavit of Milner that actually proves it was a policy decision. It was a decision how they were going to operate day to day. They have a policy. It's the comprehensive water resource management plan. They have a policy that is in place. Then the city staff is making operational decisions on how to go about enacting that policy. The case law is really clear that you can't go against your policy. The policy that says that we maintain, repair, and inspect all of our water system, including wetlands. What they did was made an operational decision that they weren't going to do that. And the pumping policy in 2014 was directly in response to this. It was, even if it happened in 2014, not 2017, which he was completely unclear in his testimony, it was in response to complaints about the East Basin. And that's just how they decided to handle the East Basin. That's not a policy that's enacted by the city. It's not, they didn't consider anything other than they didn't want to deal with this East Basin. And if it had been a policy in 2014, why did the city in 2021 actually enact it as a policy? And why did Ross Bittner, not know about it?
So you're saying for summary judgment purposes, there's a material question of fact as to whether a policy existed?
I'm saying it's pretty clear that there wasn't a policy, but at least there's a question of fact because we took the testimony of everybody involved in this. And, Ross Bittner got the DNR permit so the city could pump. And he didn't know that there was a policy that doesn't happen. And if this was really a policy enacted by the city that considered all those factors, then you would think the engineering department that actually works with the infrastructure would know about it. But they didn't. And all of the stuff that's been attached To the addendum, I want to point out the comp plan, it says it was enacted in 2020. The watershed district plan said it was enacted everywhere. What they're trying to do is go back and make a policy to justify something they failed to do, to protect their staff's operational decision. And that's not allowed. And it's also not allowed to, if you have a duty, you don't get discretionary immunity if you fail to fulfill your legal duty. And there is a legal duty in Minnesota that a city has to exercise reasonable care in maintaining its stormwater facilities. And these are clearly stormwater facilities. I know there's a lot in the briefing about how this is just a natural body of water. It is not a natural body of water. It was. But it changed when you actually installed infrastructure to drain water into it. This is a part of their stormwater sewer system. They all testified to it. Milner was asked the direct question. He said yes. Olson was asked the direct question. He said yes. If you look at the transcript from the district court, counsel said that this is part of the stormwater system. And now we have an entire brief where there are pages claiming it's not even part of the stormwater system because it's a natural body of water.
Counsel, I take it that you're referring to Section 103E of the Minnesota statutes?
Section 103E plus, there's a common law duty under Cabot, Pettinger, Greenwood. Those are three cases that have ruled that the city must exercise reasonable, ordinary and reasonable care to ensure that their stormwater system, their holding ponds all work correctly. And Greenwood says if a city alters the natural flow of water, they're liable just like any citizen that alters the natural flow of water. When you put pipes to take water from other locations in the city and move it to here, you are altering the natural flow of water.
Was there any testimony? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Was there any testimony in the record as to what would happen if the city stopped the two pipes that were coming in?
No, there is not.
Can I just clarify something you said earlier in your argument, counsel? You stated, and I wrote this down, that pumping is the remedy to get the water out. Is that the only remedy to remove the water?
The way we understand, yes. Okay. I think that there are things that can be done to make it hold more water. If they want to keep pumping into it, they could dredge it. You can dredge a wetland that's being used as part of your stormwater system. It's allowable under Minnesota law. The DNR obviously gave them the permit to actually pump water out. But the whole thing is that it's only so big. And if it's not going to drain to the groundwater anymore, then something has to give. The answer isn't, it's not draining to the groundwater anymore. Water's coming from other neighborhoods into it. There's a natural flow of water. We'll just sit back and see what happens. When you start using a wetland as part of your stormwater drainage system, you have a duty. That is the city's water that it's holding.
The development around this,
The
development around this basin, is it fairly new or is it old?
Interlock and Bluff is fairly new. I believe it was constructed in the 90s. Skyline Drive is an old development, but what's happening there is redevelopment. So we're taking these smaller structures and making them into mini mansions, which has
And these developments are all within the city of Edina?
Yes.
So the city is getting the benefit of the tax revenue by the expansion, by the new construction, all of which is impacting, your claim is, impacting the water that's coming into this basin.
Correct. And they're also charging the people who live around this basin a stormwater management fee. And then they're claiming in this case that they have, that they don't do anything with stormwater for this neighborhood. It's all natural. It goes into a natural basin. They're getting a stormwater management fee and not managing the stormwater at all. The other thing I just want to quickly, I'm running out of time, correct something. They did say that they look at wetlands on demand, but know that the problem happened here starting in 2014. And they testified that they never really inspected it until 2019, 2020. That was Milner's testimony. They're now saying that this, when they came in to look at the water level in 2017, that was an inspection. That was just seeing how the water level was rising. Nobody looked at this until 2019, 2020. And the first time that that they ever did anything to policy-wise was a year after we started this lawsuit. And then you see for the first time, the city enacting a policy saying, we don't pump water unless it affects a primary structure. Know that that never existed anywhere in the city before then.
All right, council, your time has expired. Is there anything else from the panel this morning? All right, very good. Thank you. We've reset the clock. Council, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. Just to clarify a few, I think, misstatements. I heard my colleague continue to use the word pumping into. The city is not pumping any water here. This is water flows downhill. And the last development was 1998. And that's in the staff report. That's why I think that's a good summary for the court. The last road reconstruction was 1999. Since 2014, for any of the teardowns, and this is in the record as well in the staff report, that landowners must demonstrate that there is that the new house, new construction will result in no net increase in water runoff rate or volume. So in other words, to address this notion that, well, you're building this big house, that's creating the problems. This was addressed back in 2014. And keep in mind, the allegation is, hey, I started to see problems in 2014, which is consistent with groundwater. The second point I want to clarify, there was a suggestion that, well, they could direct all of the water away from and within the watershed district. And I think I started my comments. So Barr looked at that. That's in the Barr report. Barr said, even if we take those 50 houses, that small watershed district, and pushed all of that over to Highland Lake, it would have a negligible impact. It wouldn't solve the concern that they have.
Is your position really that the remedy for any claim that the plaintiff is seeking in this particular case is to remove the water from the East Basin, which has now been conceded the only way to do that is by pumping?
It is. I mean, it just is. I mean, both experts have looked at this. You can't, when the water table is at ground, and if you dredge it, the water table is still going to be there. You know, and by the way, their expert didn't suggest, no expert has suggested dredging would help, because if the water table is at ground zero, digging down is just going to make it lake.
So what was the basis for that application to DNR then to do all of that?
It wasn't to dredge. I mean, the idea was you can get a permit. The DNR.
Well, you have to show some basis for the permit. What was the permit supposed to be doing?
Well, to dewater and a landowner can get that, but that's inconsistent with the city's policy. The fact a good faith mistake was made doesn't undermine the notion that.
That's not my question. My question is, what was the basis for requesting the permit? What was to be accomplished?
To pump the water out. To pump the water, to bring the water line down, which is what they're asking here in this lawsuit.
And you're telling me that you had this policy for a long time, but nobody can document it anywhere?
I think number one, it's in the when they responded to Mr. Tengden, the emails in the record indicate that was cited as the basis in 2014. We have the city manager on record of saying, listen, I got together with the department heads in 2014 in response to historic flooding in Edina in 2014. So this notion that we just pulled this out of thin air is just has no basis in the record whatsoever. Again, the staff report from the city manager explains this is how we got here. Back in 2014, we had too many.
Does the DNR permit create a genuine fact issue as to whether this really was a policy or whether this was an operational decision?
No, it doesn't. I mean, the fact that we're trying to help landowners, I mean, we ought to encourage, and we do, we're trying to help citizens in the community to address their concerns. And the fact that we tried to help them and that we realized it was inconsistent with the policy doesn't create a fact issue. It shows that we're trying to help folks.
And this application to DNR was made by the engineering staff for Edina?
It was, you know, Mr. Bintner had sent that in when he got
and his position in. His position was what?
I don't have his title. I'm sorry, I don't have that. He's an assistant. He's an assistant. He's not a department head, I guess I'll just put
it. But he apparently was not in the loop about knowing about what the policy was, huh?
Well, he made a mistake, and it's a good faith mistake. And, you know, he's not being sued here. Otherwise, we'd be talking about official immunity issues. And we think this is a textbook policy.
I raise the question because it goes to the credibility of this claim that there was this long policy that was adopted by all the departments being involved. And here you've got the engineering department, apparently, who apparently wasn't aware of it. At least that's one view of it, that they weren't aware of it.
Well, we've got the testimony of, and I'll just, if I may wrap up.
You may, go ahead.
We have the undisputed testimony on the record of the department heads, and we have the staff report from the city manager saying this is what happened. So there is no, and we have the city council ratifying that too. So we have, this is the policy. And again, that's why I refer the staff report and the city council's resolution really does give a good history of how we got here. This wasn't contrived. It was a longstanding policy by the city, and I would ask the court to reverse the district court based on discretionary function immunity. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is now submitted. We really appreciate